The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today.
Fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hey everybody, this is episode number 29 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back. Got a lot to talk about this week. We pushed up our recording time from our normal time, so we didn't have as much time to come up with topics, but I think we've got a pretty jam-packed roster. A lot of BFZ talk, so hopefully you all are interested in listening to that. Before we get started, though, we always have our Woman of Excellence, and this week she is Jacqueline Folia. She is a young lady from Albany, New York. Repping the New York, Cali.
Yay. I mean, Albany is actually very far from where I grew up, but it's our state cap. It was our state capital. Like, whenever we did standardized testing, there was lots of talk about, oh, we have to do well because of Albany or whatever. So, yeah, Albany was a familiar touchstone for me in my childhood.
Did they often beat you guys?
I have no idea.
Okay. You just made it sound like there was some sort of competition there, and I didn't know if there were any, like, pent-up feelings where I would be like, you know, Jacqueline grew up in goddamn Albany! You're just like, oh. Do you need to unpack, Hallie? Or can we
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
So Jacqueline is a lovely young lady. She's mostly known for her alterations. She has her own website, alterationsandart.com. She started making appearances at the Star City Open, so you can also hire her for commissions there. And she's also getting into cosplay. She played Chandra at GP Las Vegas. And she's really, really lovely. So if you'd like to follow her on Twitter, I believe she's just at Jacqueline Folia. Let me just go ahead and make sure of that. And she's also taking commissions, so if you're looking to have your cards done, definitely go ahead and hire her. Some of the ones that I've seen her do recently, which are very impressive, she did Ethereal Armor, Elish Norn, she did a very fantastic Elish Norn, and True Name Nemesis. Oh. So definitely go ahead and pay her a visit. I have her at... at Jacqueline Folia, J-A-C-L-Y-N-F-O-G-L-I-A. So let's go ahead and get started. So the four of us, we all got a chance to play this weekend, pre-release?
Yes.
All right. So let's go ahead and talk about what we opened, how we did, and if the set lived up to expectations. Hallie, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. I hope I don't ramble for too long. I went to four pre-releases.
Four?
And some of them, yeah. So Card Kingdom, my LGS, offers 6 pre-releases. Midnight, 11 a.m., and 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. I've learned that I don't play Magic well when I'm sleep-deprived, so I don't go to the midnight ones anymore. That was a bad decision. But I did go at 11 and 5 on both days. So my pools tended to, like, muddle together a little bit. I opened a lot of the same cards, or I played with a lot of the same cards in some of them. So I actually took all my decks and I assembled them and I put them on my desk so that I can have them for reference while we record, because there are just so many cards. So I ended up going 3-0-1 in my first pre-release. Mm-hmm. Promo card, which actually came in handy, was Undergrowth Champion.
How was that?
It was awesome. Okay. I had it in another deck and never got to cast it and was sad. but in this deck, it did a lot of work. For those of you following along at home, this is the green mythic creature. It's a 2/2 for 1/2 green. It's an elemental. it has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you can put a +1/+1 counter on it, and if damage would be dealt to Undergrowth Champion while it has a counter on it, you can prevent that damage and remove a counter from it. So this thing just blocked all day. It just held off Eldrazi. It even got into the red zone a couple times itself once I made it, a 7/7? I think that's as large as it got. Ooh. Some of the games were very long and kind of grindy, and so I just kept playing lands, getting landfall triggers, and that was really great. It gave me something to do when I was flooding out and rewarded me for, you know, making my land drops, so that was fun. The real MVPs of this deck, I was playing a bug Eldrazi deck, essentially. I ramped into Breaker of Armies, which is a pretty good creature. It's a 10-8 that lures something, so if it attacks, all creatures have to block it so you can get through with your other creatures. I was able to ramp into it because I had the unbeatable combination of Brood Butcher and Catacomb Sifter. These guys are best friends. Brood Butcher is a rare black-green Eldrazi. It has Devoid. It brings a Scion buddy with it. And if you pay black-green and sacrifice a creature, you can give target creature -2/-2 until end of turn. So that's good for getting their little things out of the way, or getting rid of their Scion so that they can't ramp into their big stuff. And Catacomb Sifter is a black-green uncommon Eldrazi with Devoid that also brings a buddy. And it says that whenever another creature you control dies, scry one. So I was able to just, like, sack my Eldrazi, kill something, scry one. It was awesome.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, so that deck was a lot of fun. I ended up drawing the last round unintentionally because we played a really slow, grindy game. And as sometimes happens at pre-releases, people aren't comfortable playing with the new cards. They don't play as fast as they normally do. You end up drawing. It's unfortunate, but sometimes unavoidable. But we played some really good games. I also got a Sunken Hollow, which was cool. Helped me fix my mana.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you three colors. I was going to ask you, was that tough to do in this format?
It depended on what your fixing was. It seemed like, oddly enough, I saw a lot of people opening the rare lands, which was kind of weird. Like, it seemed like they were showing up more than some of the other rares in the set, and it's partly because some of them were promo cards. But it almost felt like they were seeded into the pre-release packs more often than other rares, which was interesting. I saw a lot of people playing three colors. I played three colors three of the four times that I pre-released to, you know, different effects. Sometimes it was great, sometimes it wasn't. I also saw a lot of people trying to play three colors when they really shouldn't have. Because there isn't a ton of fixing in the set. Like, most of the lands only make, well, the common lands are only monocolored.
Yeah.
And the uncommon lands don't make colored mana, but they have cool effects. And so you have to have these rare lands in order to have actual mana fixing. But, I mean, there's an elf that makes any color of mana. There are some cards that let you search for lands, like Rampant Growth type effects. So, and there's Evolving Wild. So, like, those are things that help, but in general, I saw people playing more colors than they probably should have.
Yeah. I was tempted to go three colors, and I just didn't feel, I have this love-hate relationship with the three color decks where they look so fun, and whenever I play them, they turn into train wrecks, but whenever I stay safe and go two colors, I always end up losing it to the three color decks, so I just can never win.
Yeah. So, my second deck was a three-color train wreck, because I opened an Oblivion Sower, and I was like, ooh, Oblivion Sower, this will totally help me fix my mana. I can steal lands from my opponent. That didn't happen very often. I ended up playing mostly black-green, splashing white for some really good removal. I had a Gideon's Reproach, two Sheer Drops, and a Quarantine Field, which I probably should not have splashed for, but, I mean, Quarantine Field is real good.
I will never begrudge you for making room for an enchantment.
Yeah, so for those of you following along at home, Quarantine Field is a mythic enchantment. It's essentially an Oblivion Ring that can hit multiple targets. So there were some games where my opponents would ramp into big Eldrazi, and I would Quarantine Field, like, two of them at the same time, which was really cool. In general, though, like, I heard that the format was very slow, and most of the time it was. Most of my games did last until, you know, turn 10 or turn 12. But I felt like when I played this deck, I just kind of got run over. Maybe it was bad matchups, maybe I didn't have enough early game, but I just, like, I played against the guy who went Dominator Drone, Dominator Drone, Dominator Drone.
Ooh.
Or I played against someone who just, like, had infinite bounce spells and, like, kept getting ahead on tempo. So this deck didn't do as well. I think I went 1-3 with this one. And I thought it was good, but I mean, combination of bad matchups and maybe just like not the best deck building on my part. And then let's see. The third deck also had Oblivion Sower. I had 3 Eldrazi Skyspawners, which is the blue spell that's, it's the blue creature that's essentially a better Sandstep Outcast, from Fate Reforged. It's, 2 and a blue for an Eldrazi drone. It has flying. It's a 2/1, and when it comes into play, it brings a Scion with it. So, it's really efficient. Flyers are good in the format because there are lots of board stalls. And, yeah, this one was okay. I think I went 2-2. I ended up, playing against a lot of people with huge Eldrazi, and just kind of got outclassed a couple of times. And, God, there was a real feel-bad moment at the end of this event. Have you ever had an opponent who, beats you and then tries to make you feel better by apologizing for how good his deck yes. is?
I've had people do that even when their deck wasn't good. So let me interrupt you for just a second. So this is back when the Avacyn Restored pre-release was happening, and we all know how much fun that set was in Limited. Mm-hmm. So I was playing against this young man, and his deck was terrible, but he had Grizzlebrand. Mm-hmm. And he basically just dirtled for the 8 turns or however many turns it is to cast Grizzlebrand, because Lord knows I've never hard cast him. So I don't know his casting cost. But so he basically just kept me busy for so many turns, did really nothing of value, and then played Grizzlebrand. And of course, Grizzlebrand is very difficult to deal with. And so he, you know, he beat me very quickly. And then afterwards, he was like, yeah, this deck just really came together, like the synergies and the power. And I'm like, no. Like, let's get one thing straight. You had Grizzlebrand, okay? Yeah. This was not some deck building masterpiece. You're not getting on Star City Games because of this. No, you had Grizzlebrand. And in those particular situations, I get a little offended because it's like, you didn't know.
Yeah, so this guy beat me down with Bane of Balaged, which is the uncommon Eldrazi that I really wish was a rare because it's kind of oppressive. It's a 7/5 and it essentially has Annihilator. Like, it's not keyworded, but when it attacks, an opponent has to exile 2 permanents.
Yeah.
So he just played it on turn 5 in both of the games, even though it cost 7 mana. He just ramped into it, and I couldn't really do a whole lot. Like, I just, all right, exile some lands, okay, exile some Scions, and, like, if I had been able to mount more of an offense, it might have been a very different game, but I just, like, I didn't have a way of dealing with it, and after the match was over, he was just like, hey, like, I'm sorry, like, this deck was really good. I only lost to someone who had, like, a really fast start. And I just was like, Okay, have a nice day. And I just left. Like, I tried to be polite, but, I mean, it's just, he thought he was helping, and he just wasn't. It doesn't make people feel better when you say, oh, I'm sorry you lost. Like, my deck was just too good. There's nothing you could have done.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real feel bad moment. Before we wrap up with the third deck, I have to say I had a really good time playing with Snapping Gnarlid.
Oh, yeah?
Which was the 2/2. It's the Landfall Bear. Landfall, it gets +1/+1. This was the little Gnarlid that could. Because I had a turn in one game where I played a turn 2 Snapping Gnarlid, and then turn 3, played an Evolving Wilds, got a landfall trigger, attacked with it, opponent didn't block, I played Swell of Growth, which gives a creature +2/+2 until end of turn and allows you to put a land from your hand onto the battlefield, put another Evolving Wilds onto the battlefield and cracked both of them.
Ooh.
That was a very big Gnarlid. That was a gnarly.
That's also some skill on your part, like to know that you can do that with all those interactions. Like, I wouldn't have thought to do that.
It was really cool, yeah. I was fortunate enough to get 2 Evolving Wilds in this pool, which helped fix my mana quite a bit. And I also got a foil Sunken Hollow, which is a really awkward card to open in a set that has Expedition lands. Because I was opening my pack and I was like, oh my god, it's a foil land! Is this a Polluted Delta? Oh, it's a foil Sunken Hollow. Okay. Wait, why am I mad about that? This is awesome. So that was funny. And then finally, I went 3-1 with my last deck, which I thought was terrible. Because I just opened a bunch of, black and white rares that were quite good, and a lot of the rest of my deck was just kind of like filler creatures. But I had Drana, who is amazing.
Yeah.
There aren't very many creatures that block her, so she gets through and she can win the game all by herself. I had Felidar Sovereign. I had, Ameria Shepherd as my promo card. That's the landfall angel that, brings a creature back to, brings a non-land permanent back to your hand. Or if it's a plains, you can put that permanent on the battlefield instead. That was very good. I had Wasteland Strangler, which is the Eldrazi processor that lets you exile a card or take a card from exile, process it, and give a creature -3/-3, which is pretty cool. Otherwise, like, I had some very strong rares. I had Shambling Vent, which is the, black-white creature land. And I had, Stasis Snare, which is the, essentially the instant speed O-ring. I had some good removal and a couple good rares, but like I said, a lot of my creatures were just kind of filler. I was just playing, like, 2/2s and, like, little cheap flyers. And I managed to go 3-1. Like, this deck definitely overperformed. And that led me to, create what I call Halley's Law, which is that, whenever I think my deck is terrible, I do well, and whenever I think my deck is really good, I do poorly. Possibly because I just go out of my way to play as well as I can when I think my deck is bad, or I get kind of cocky and think that I have better chances than I actually do when my deck is pretty decent. So, I don't know, I enjoyed playing with Drana. I enjoyed, you know, playing the black-white deck. It was nice to actually play two colors for the first time all weekend. That was nice. and that pool also had an Expedition land in it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I got a Cinderglade, which is the, red and green land from Battle for Zendikar. So, not the most expensive or flashiest Expedition land, but still pretty cool. So, I was happy that I got that. I'm not sure how long I'm going to hold on to it, but Robert may want it for one of his EDH decks, so that's still pretty cool. Overall, I guess this wasn't my favorite set that I've done sealed with. Like, sealed was a little bit awkward in that sometimes you don't have a lot of it's a very synergy based set. There are a lot of cards that don't go in every deck. And it's sometimes you'll end up with, like, a lot of processors and not a lot of ingest, or some allies but not enough, or some Eldrazi but not enough ways to ramp into them, or vice versa, like lots of ramp and not enough big things. And it's definitely, I'm really optimistic about drafting this set. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, but I think, you know, Rise of the Eldrazi was also an awkward set for sealed, because there wasn't a lot of overlap between strategies, but it was a great draft set, so I think that's what this set is going to be like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you, Hallie. You know, when I was looking at the colors that I opened, which I'll get to a little later, I felt like the thing that stopped me from playing those colors was that, so like I was thinking of going black-blue, but the blue that I had didn't go with the strategy of blue that I was going for, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like I wanted to go in like a blue control direction, and it just so happened that the blue that I opened was more of a blue aggro direction.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was some push and pull with the colors there, where like, you know, people were opening red, but there was the red that did this versus the red that did that, and that made it really hard to choose that color depending on what the other colors pulled you towards, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Katie, how did yours go?
Wow. That's a lot to follow up. So I only played one. I did the two at a giant on Sunday. So I really didn't know what was good and what was bad. But
oh, no, you weren't the Limpy Gazelle, were you?
Oh, no. Well,
okay.
Well, my deck wasn't. I mean, okay. I probably was in my brain. But I was a little fried from, like, studying the weekend, and I just kept saying these, like, nonsensical things. But my deck was really good, so that's all that counts. So I played with one of my friends named Todd, and we built two decks, a red blue deck and then a junk allies deck. And our red blue was like all basically all the void creatures and colorless creatures with, like, ramp and control. And then our junk allies deck was, like, a swarm, little things that can get big. And we went 3-1. And so our junk allies deck was, it was pretty sweet. Like, it had two of the Orin Reef Hydra, or Riot Hydra, which is the rare guy who, whenever you put a, it has landfall, get a 1/1 counter. If it's a forest, you get two. So that worked really well with our Evolving Wilds. And we also had a Canopy Vista. And then we had four Eyeless Watchers, which is the 1/1 for four that makes two 1/1s when it comes in. Two 1/1 scions. And then we had the Tajuru Warcaller. We had two of him, where whenever an ally enters the battlefield under your control, creatures get +2/+2. So we basically got to, like, 5 mana, and we had, like, 3 Eyeless Watchers and all our little scions, and then I'd put, like, 2/2/2 allies, and everybody would get, like, +4/+4/+8/+8, and then they just hit them, and it just always worked really well. It was great.
Yeah.
We also got the Lantern Scout, which is the guy that gives all your creature's lifelink for that turn when an ally enters. I really liked Royal's Retribution.
Yes.
That card did a lot of work over the weekend.
Which one is that?
It's the 5 mana double white card that's an instant, and it deals 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of target attacking or blocking creatures. So if they have, like, they try and, like, triple block one of your big guys to kill it, and then you're like, haha. Sorry. But, you know, politely. Yeah, and then in our red-blue deck, we had 3 Barrage Tyrant, which is the guy where you can sack, I believe it's a colorless creature, and deal damage equal to its power to a creature or a player. So we kind of did, like, a ramp deck. We had 4 Eldrazi Sky Spawner, which is the guy that Hallie was talking about. That's the 2/1 flyer that makes the scions. So we kind of just used him and ramped into Ulamog's Despoiler. We had a Breaker of Armies, and we had 2 Eldrazi Devastator. And then we could sack them, and we were like, okay, take 8, you take 10.
So you were just flinging them. You weren't even really attacking.
Yeah, really, it didn't, you didn't even have to attack. I mean, sometimes we attacked. But sometimes you didn't have to. I felt like we didn't play against any other, like, really big Eldrazi decks. We played against a bunch of just really, like, little slow decks, I guess. So the Orin Reef Hydra has Trample, and he was just really great at, like, pushing through 2/2s and stuff. And then we also had a Nettle Drone, which is really good into a giant because it does it to each opponent.
Yeah.
We were debating.
I'm having flashbacks of Lobber Crew.
Yes.
Yes. That's what a card reminded me of. And I was like, oh, no, not, no.
Lobber Crew is the greatest. We debated playing our 2 Tunneling Geopedes, which is the landfall, deals 1 damage to each opponent. So it's basically 2 damage a turn. But we ended up cutting them. But the only round we lost was to a group that played, like, the turn 1, 2/1 ally for white. And then it went turn 2 into a Calastria Healer.
Yeah.
Which is the one that drains every time allies come in, and it does it to each opponent. And then they played turn 3, another Calastria Healer.
Ooh. Oh, no.
And then they went turn 4 into, what's it called? Retreat to Emeria, which is the white enchantment that has landfall, where you can put a 1/1 ally creature onto the battlefield.
Oh, no.
So then we were just, like, being drained every single turn, and then we just died fast.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I want to draft that deck.
Yeah, it was really good. And we were like, how many of those did you get? And he was like, 2. And I was like, oh. Good thing you had in turns 2 and 3. I was worried. We also got 2 of those, but we were not lucky enough to play both of them on turns 2 and 3.
Well, it sounds like you were still able to fling big colorless creatures and have big hydras with tramples. So I don't feel too bad for you.
No, yeah, we definitely swarmed. Like, one turn, we swung for, like, 35 damage, and all it was like, 4-1-1s. Like, here we go.
And did you give them life gain with the lantern ally?
Of course.
Oh.
What else would I do? yeah, so it was fun. It was a good break from studying.
Did you like the set?
I did. I think I'm more of a fan of it than I was last week. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan that I didn't know what cards were allies and what weren't, because
yeah.
I started just trying to, like, stick stuff in the deck, and Todd was like, that's not an ally. I was like, oh, but it seems like it really should be. So I didn't like that part, but I do think it'll be a good set for Limited. I'm excited to draft it. I think that it seemed like there's a lot of subtle things that you can do that I'm excited to explore. And I'm not really sure about it in Standard yet, but I'll leave that to somebody else to figure out what decks are good, and then I'll just kind of take them and experiment with them from there.
Yeah. Chris, how did your pre-release go?
It was okay. I went to one on Sunday. I decided to forego the midnight one because I was like, I can't stay awake. So,
didn't you determine that last time too?
Yeah, because I was like, I'll stay awake. You guys go have fun, go eat, and then I'm like, but I could just do this on Sunday. Fuck it, we're going to Denny's. So that was what we did instead. So I changed it to Sunday, and I was just floored because I guess I just didn't expect that many people to be there on a Sunday for a pre-release. And I was like, holy shit, the whole Jansen clam came out and everything. It was awesome.
How many people did you guys have?
39.
I had 55 on Sunday.
So it's
do
like
you guys still know your numbers for your midnight turnouts?
We had 72 for all 6 pre-releases.
Like
I'm not
each?
Sure about ours.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was probably pretty packed. There probably was probably over 30 people there for it, I would imagine. It's usually pretty standard. But yeah, so I decided to forego that, went there, and just kind of tried to figure out what I guess I was hoping to make based on, you know, what I got. I didn't get the best pulls, but I figured I'd throw something together. Because I got some cool landfall dudes, like I got the Snappy Gnarled that Hallie was talking about earlier, and I got 2 of them. So I was like, well, I'll at least put one in, maybe I'll put a second one in if I have to sideboard later. I got the Scythe Leopard, the one green with landfall, 1/1. I mean, he's too good not to put in there. He was awesome. Then I wanted to have some, like, big dudes to hopefully, like, get out later, because I figure everyone was going to have Eldrazi, whether or not they had the ramp to get them out, so they were going to, you know, be playing the long game anyway, so I was like, okay, fine. So I had a Tajuru Beastmaster that I wanted to eventually drop, because I had some white allies with it, and I was like, okay, so this is an Elf Warrior ally, I have these other white allies, we'll do this, because he's, what, a 5/5, and whenever he or another ally enters the battlefield under your control, you get +1/+1 till end of turn for all your creatures. And so that's pretty dope. So I wanted him. I never did get to cast my Plated Crusher, unfortunately. But he's big, and his mana cost is big. But he's awesome because he's Trample and Hexproof, and I like that. But I didn't get to cast him. I did get out my Territorial Baloth, which is 4 colorless and a green. Whenever a land enters battlefield under control, it gets +2/+2, and he's base power 4/4, so that was awesome. But, like, once I got him out, people were like, kill it, and I'm like, damn it, I didn't even get to swing at you with it yet. So it was kind of disappointing. I remade my deck after the first round to put some more Eldrazi in there that I didn't have before, and took out some other stuff. I'm like, this doesn't work. I ended up getting 2 Herald of Kozilek, so I figured I'd splash some blue and red in there, because it was just base green, to try to drop those. All my colorless spells would be 2 less, or 1 less to cast, so I was like, sweet. I had a Salvage Drone that has Ingest, which is like, you know, little 1/1, just a blue, and when it dies, you can draw a card, and if you do, you just have to discard one. And that Benthic Infiltrator that can't be blocked, he's a 1/4, and 2 colorless and a blue. He wasn't bad. Eyeless Watcher I thought was really cool, even though he was a little high-costed for a 1-1, because you can put two Scions onto the battlefield when he comes in, and then you can sack him to add one to your mana pool, which I thought was awesome. I did get a Hedron Archive, and I couldn't not play it because it had Jace on it, and it was cool. So I play.
You are such a Johnny.
I know. But it's just awesome because I love the flavor text on it where Ugin says to him, "You've begun to understand the Hedron's true purpose. The Eldrazi can be imprisoned." And Jace is kind of like, "And how did that work out last time?" And it's like yeah, give Ugin some sass. Like, I like that. And Blister Pod was cool. The 1 green, 1/1. When it dies, you get the Scion token. Sacrifice it to add one to your mana pool. I didn't get to use Nettle Drone. I kind of just wanted to ping people like people did with like Xur'Tah Druid back in the Dizay. But I didn't really get to do that, unfortunately. My deck was not the best, but I was able to win the first round. The guy I was playing against, I don't know if he was like trying to do like some kind of control thing, but he kept on being like, "My deck hates me," because he would just get either really badly like mana screwed or some other crazy thing would happen. So I ended up beating him. And then the second game I had to play Morgan's son Trent. And his deck like just wrecked. And I don't know if you guys saw the tweet that I sent out, but he's just like, he has these like awesome one-liners that he'll just like throw out there while he's playing you. And Trent's like, "My deck is pro tour quality." He's like, "Do you want to know why?" And I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "Because my dad helped me make it." I'm like, "Very good, Trent. Very good." And he's just like, "Drop big fatties. Oh, hey, there's the Eldrazi swinging, and you're dead." And I'm like, "I ain't got nothing to say about that, Trent." He's like, "Yes." And he's just, I don't know. He was just like so excited to like be winning with his deck, and I was really happy for him. Morgan's like, "Don't take it easy on him. He needs to learn." I'm like, I won't. It's like, oh. And then I was like, "Well, I lost to him. He did it." And then the third round, I ended up playing someone that had a deck that was kind of similar to mine with some of the green creatures that they were using. It felt like a lot of people were doing like aggressive strategies where they were having like a bunch of little like landfall creatures, and then they were like splashing like Eldrazi into there. I didn't really see like any real control business going on. I'm not sure what Adam and Morgan made, but when I left, her and Adam were undefeated, and Trent had lost to his mom the round before.
Aww.
Yeah, and I said, "Oh, Morgan, I said you beat Trent." She's like, "Yeah, I had to crush him." Just like, this is wonderful.
Hashtag parenting done.
I know, right? Like, it was hilarious. I loved it. But I had a good time just like hanging out with people while I was there. Not so much, I guess, just like playing in the pre-release, so much as like in between rounds talking to people and seeing people that I hadn't seen in a long time. They're like, "Oh, we came down to a pre-release like 2 pre-releases ago, and we met you then, and like you seemed really cool. Can we sit and talk?" I'm like, "Oh, sure." So got to catch up with some people. There was someone there that I think was a foreign exchange student, I'm pretty sure. And she was staying with someone that was there for the pre-release, and they must have all come as a group. So she's opening her packs, and then she opens up an Ulamog. And everyone's like, "Oh, that's so awesome, da da da." She's like, "Chaos Ulamog." And we're like, "Ulamog is very cool." Like, you want that. But she didn't really know, I think, like, how to build her deck, and no one was really kind of showing her, and I guess she wasn't so worried about it. And then they called 5 minutes, and she's like, I don't know what to do with this. And we're like, "Okay, this is what you kind of want to do, just shove all this together, and what colors do you have?" So I don't know how well she knew how to play, but it was just kind of interesting to see someone, you know, probably play Magic for the first time, you know, possibly with like a language barrier, and, you know, just kind of see how that all came together. But it seems like she had an awesome time, and people were like explaining things to her, which I thought was really cool. I didn't get to play her, unfortunately. I dropped after round 3 and was like, "I'm going to go watch wrestling, because that sounds more fun than what I'm doing right now, unfortunately." People were speculating while I was there about whether or not the set would be good to draft. I guess I'd have to wait and draft it for myself to see if I like it for limited or not. I don't know how I would feel about sealed again, but draft I think would be okay. I mean, I guess I'll find out now for the GP, because we'll be doing that. There's definitely like some cool cards in it. I don't know about for standard, like how they're all going to like fit together and what they're all going to do. I guess that will remain to be seen. There's definitely things that I could see putting into like modern and stuff like that. So I guess I'll just have to reserve my official opinions on everything until everything kind of comes together.
Yeah. So I played on Sunday as well. I opened an okay pool. I have it, you know, it's in front of me as I'm talking to you. And so some of the rares that I opened a Planar Outburst, which is the board wipe, destroy all non-land creatures, the white board wipe. I opened the Sire of Stagnation, which I thought was fantastic. That is the Eldrazi, whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, that player exiles the top two cards of their library and you draw two cards. So I thought that was fabulous. I also opened Noyandar, the Royal Shaper, which is the legendary merfolk, where anytime you cast an instant or sorcery, you can put three +1/+1 counters on a land, and you're basically awakening that land. So I had these, I kind of wanted to go blue-black, but I felt like I had 75% of a blue-black deck, but not enough to like go all the way. I thought about going Esper, but like I told Hallie, I was really scared of going three colors because I just wasn't sure I could make it work. Now that I have them all laid out in front of me, I still think I could have gone three color, but knowing my luck, it wouldn't have gone down like that. Like, I have really bad luck. I have really bad habit of when I make sealed decks, I always turn them into like these really grand plans. So like, for example, I built a black-white life gain deck, like Hallie was talking about, and I really kind of went overboard with like my machinations here. Machinations? Thank you. So I opened two of the core clerics, the Stonehaven Medic, which you can tap to gain one life, and then I had two of the Nurkana Assassins, the vampires that when they gain life, they get death touch, and then I had the Calastria Healer, and I was like, okay, yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna tap this to gain life, which is gonna give this death touch, and then I'm gonna put that into play, which is gonna drain that, which is gonna gain me more life, which is gonna give it death touch. Do you see where this is going? Yeah, this is gonna totally work. And I had all these allies, and then I had the things that I thought were allies, like Katie said, but they weren't. And then I had three Smite the Monstrous, I had a Ruinous Path, and my whole theory was that everything I played was gonna be low to the ground, because I also opened an Align Hedron Network, which is the artifact where you have, for four colorless, when it enters the battlefield, you exile all creatures with power 5 or greater for as long as it stays on the battlefield. And I was like, yeah, less than 5. Low to the ground. I'm going to play that, kill all the big guys, and my little things are going to get right into it. Yeah, big plans. Woo! And, of course, it didn't go down anything like that. not even close. And then, so I was playing this deck, and it worked kind of okay, but when I went up against creatures that were bigger and I didn't have, you know, the Smite the Monstrous, or if I didn't have the Aligned Hedron Network, there were definitely these board stalls, and it got very difficult to get through. And I didn't have enough resources to just drain them, like to just have that be my win condition. So I dropped it 2-2. I had a lot of fun with the set. I mean, I'm not really into pre-releases in general, but I can't say it was, I mean, it wasn't painful to play. I did enjoy the flavor of the set. I thought it was really cool. You know, there were definitely times where, like, I would be building my decks and I would say, okay, I'm allies, but I have this Eldrazi card, but I shouldn't be playing them because I'm playing the allies. And it was really hard for me to sort of talk myself into, you know, playing the Bane of Balaged when I'm running all allies, because I was like, oh god, it's an Eldrazi and that's wrong. And I had to kind of get over that. But the set was okay. I don't know if I would really do this again. I did have an interesting experience with my round 2 opponent, which maybe Katie can weigh in on. So I was playing a young man. He was kind of newish, and he just never untapped. Not even once. So he was, I'd say he was about junior high age, and he was already beating me, which is fine, but he never untapped. So I was very nice. I was like, hey girl, you might want to untap your lands at the start of every turn. And he'd be like, oh yeah, right. And then the next turn would happen and he would not do that. And I'd be like, gotta untap. And he'd be like, oh, derp, sorry. And then he'd do it again. And I was having to remind him every turn. And it got to the point where like 4 or 5 consecutive turns happened where he was not untapping anything. Like he was just going straight to the draw step and I was having to remind him. And I'll admit I got a little annoyed and we had a judge who was playing in the event. He was playing that day. And I was like, can I do anything? Like, is there any recourse here? And he was like, because pre-release, and this is what he said. He said, because pre-releases are casual REL, you can't give warnings out at casual REL. And so he said that if the young man kept doing it, that you can either, you can't give a warning, but you can DQ them. And I was like, well, I don't want to DQ him, but I just want him to kind of like not do this because I'm having a hard time following what he's doing. And it's very hard for me to accept defeat when you're not going through what you should be doing. And he was like, yeah, it's kind of extremes. We either do nothing or we go the full nine. And is that true, Katie? Like there's nothing I could have done?
So it's true that those are the only options, but I would not DQ this kid for...
Oh, no, I wouldn't either, but...
like, I don't feel like that's a viable option, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so at pre-releases, you want everybody to have a good time, including opponents. But we don't give warnings, we don't do anything of that nature. I feel like maybe the judge should have talked to him and let him know, like, hey, you really need to do this. But besides that, there's not a ton to do, like, okay. I guess keep reminding him. Although it is obnoxious to play against people like that too. And it's like, can you just untap once? Like, just once. It makes the game a lot easier.
Yeah,
but there's not a ton you can do.
Okay. And like I said, I certainly didn't want to DQ him, but I was hoping that there was maybe some option in the middle where it was like, you know, I thought a warning would have been great, maybe something leading up to it, but it just never, and even the judge himself was just like, yeah, even I was kind of, you know, concerned about that, but, you know, because of casual REL, our hands were sort of tied, so I wasn't sure how to manage that.
Yeah. Did the judge talk to him? Or did you just talk to the judge and then he was like, yeah, that's a problem?
Well, he was playing in the event. We only had one level one that was running the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I believe he was pretty tied up most of the day, so I don't think he was around, he was near our table when that happened.
Okay.
The only person who saw it was the judge who was playing in the event, and he wasn't there in like an official capacity, and I think he wanted to keep it that way.
Yeah.
So, and he was just like, yeah, there's really no recourse. And I was like, oh, and it just was a crummy feeling.
Yeah, I feel like maybe talking to the judge who's actually doing it, even though he's tied up, like he should know about stuff like that, because...
Okay.
Well, it should be fun for him. It should also be fun for you. And things like that make your experience less fun.
Yeah, there was definitely... Yeah, it was definitely a pride thing where it's like, you know, here I am losing to somebody who can't untap, you know? And I know that's probably a crummy attitude to have, but, you know, I'm just like, you know, I just didn't feel good about it.
Yeah, and if you have to tell them that many times, like, they really should get it. And if they aren't getting it, then I feel like maybe the judge... should step in and just be like, hey, you really need to do this. Like, these are basic rules of the game and they need to be followed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting though, in contrast to Chris's experience, I played nothing but control decks, which was very frustrating, because I don't like facing control decks in limited. I like, you know, just, you know, boards full of creatures and combat tricks and things like that. And, you know, having people beat me down with, you know, crummy blue Eldrazi and counterspell, kill spell, bounce spell. I was like, this is not fun. And so I was actually tweeting Chris throughout the experience and I was like, facing nothing but control, you. And then Chris goes, aggressive landfall, nothing but. And I'm like, damn, like trade ya. Like, I would have killed for some creature combat. So I just didn't feel like I was really getting that. So.
Yeah.
Banned and restricted. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Before we get off the topic of pre-releases, I had one other thing to add.
Okay.
I got to meet one of our listeners at the pre-release. Her name is Cecily. We actually answered her question episodes ago about encouraging other women to get better at magic and like how to go about doing that in competitive settings. And she showed up at my pre-release. She came up and introduced herself. And, you know, we chatted for a little bit. It turns out she recently moved to my area, so I'm hoping to see a lot more of her. And, yeah, it looked like she was having a good time at the pre-release. She was there with, I guess she was there with, like, some friends or something. But she seemed like a really cool person who I'm looking forward to hanging out with sometime.
Cool.
That's awesome. Sweet. Yeah, there was actually a gentleman at my pre-release who he followed me over from the deck tees and said that he really enjoyed the show and told me to say hello to you all. So that felt good as well.
Nice.
Yeah. Banned Restricted announcements came out today, and there were some developments. Dig Through Time, banned in Legacy.
Banned.
Banned. You know, Delve, can we call Delve a mistake? Can we really go that far?
Probably.
I feel like when you can't play it in any format except Standard, then it's not. I don't know, it's like, why print it in the first place?
Yeah, I understand that they're not really... I understand that they don't focus on the Eternal formats, but this was something I feel that people could have seen coming a mile away. Like, really? Like, you thought that a one mana draw three was fine? Like...
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's one thing when, you know, they print one card in a commander set, like Truename Nemesis, for example, and that card starts to warp the format. Like, okay, they made one mistake, that's fine. If it's an entire mechanic and there are several cards with this mechanic that are a little bit overboard, I mean, it almost feels like Dredge. Sorry, Aaron. But, you know, there are some mechanics that just sort of like, they attack the game from a different axis. And when you have so many of them with these really powerful effects, it just kind of gets out of hand.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I had to laugh at Chris Van Meter, though, because he was like, become immense. They're coming for you. So if you're playing Infect and you play Become Immense, you may not be for long.
Yeah.
Black Vice was also unbanned. People were very happy about that. And then in Vintage, Chalice of the Void and Dig Through Time are now restricted, meaning I believe restricted means you can only have one copy of them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then Thirst for Knowledge was unrestricted, and people were very happy about that. No changes to Modern, though. I think that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I was expecting.
Yeah, I think the format is pretty healthy. I feel like the decks that even though they do win before turn four, I feel like they're not enough of the metagame where you're very likely to face them. And even then, you know, they're not that consistent where it's a problem. So I think we're in a good place with Modern.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And some people were saying that even if they thought it was an issue, that they are hypothesizing that Wizards is trying to save the ban for right before the Modern PT, so that it's like a format shakeup, so that the excitement level is higher, supposedly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Willie Edel was talking about that, and he kind of called shenanigans on that, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like, I don't think that's the case. Like, I don't think that they're doing it simply for, you know, hype or promotion.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, though, I do agree that I still would like to see some unbannings. Mm-hmm. You know, I do feel that, you know, he brought up a good point. You know, if we are going to allow Grishelbrand and we are going to allow Amulet of Vigor, what's wrong with a Bloodbraid Elf? You know, what's wrong with, you know, people have talked about Sword of the Meek and then just other things that possibly could come back. And I think that's something we maybe could learn from Legacy and just maybe loosening up the strings a little bit.
Yeah.
So. There were also some changes announced for Magic Online, and I know that we've all been either streaming or dabbling in that a little bit more. The pre-releases no longer require the color ticket because we don't have like the pre-release boxes anymore. So your pre-release will be a little less expensive to play. And you can also enter with the new play points. So if you happen to, you know, if you were one of the people that had a whole bunch of other currency that was converted to play points, you can now enter a pre-release with 250 of those play points, which is a good thing. They are also going to be adding Modern Leagues, so if you want to get in on that action, I know I certainly do. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with Leagues? Are you interested in those?
I haven't been on Magic Online long enough to be familiar with them, but based on what I've heard from some other players, they seem like old favorites.
Okay. So for those who don't know what they are, from what I understand, a league is basically a event. It's five rounds, but you have the option of playing whenever you have the time to. So like, let's say that you join this league and let's say you have time for one game on a Friday night. You can play that game. It saves your record. It saves your deck. And then you can come back in the time frame. I think there's like a time frame you have to do it. And then you can play your second match. And if you have time for one more, you can do one more that night. And you basically get to play your five rounds at your speed. It's not like you have to play them all consecutively. And then there's prizes at the end of it, depending on how well you do. And it just gives people a little more flexibility to play who maybe can't sit through a whole daily.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really cool. I think Modern is going to be a big hit. Legacy dailies are now back up to 4 rounds. Yay!
Yay!
They are also returning the 8-player single elimination queues to Legacy, which is good. And they've also lowered the number of minimum players to fire a Legacy event to 12, and they also added an additional daily. So more Legacy support always makes me happy. And they also changed the prize support for the 8-player single elimination queues. Before it was 120 points, before it was 140 points for first place and then 60 points for second place, and people felt like that was a little too weighted towards first place and that you didn't really get enough for coming in second. So they changed 120 points for first and 80 for second. So that way it's not as feel bad if you come in second, which I think is a good thing. Listener question this week. We are just about tapped out of questions. So if you guys have anything you would like to ask us, even if it's not related to Magic, send us your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We're also looking for nominations for Women of Excellence. So if you see women in your area or women online who you think are doing big things, definitely go ahead and tell us about them too so we can go ahead and recognize them. And our question this week comes from Calvin. Calvin lives in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. More love from Canada. And Calvin says, hello. I know this is not about magic, but I feel like you can help me. I feel like I may be a trans woman, and I'm having a lot of worries about what it means to transition. My biggest fear, however, is not about physical changes, but about my voice. I know this is an issue for trans women in particular, as trans men have testosterone to make their voices deeper, but we are stuck with having to do vocal training. To say that my voice is deep would be an understatement. I can comfortably sing along to Barry White, and when I sing Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, I even take the chorus down an octave as it fits my range better. Oh my. I'm not an attractive person and find most of my confidence has come from developing my voice. I love performing on stage, doing improv and stand-up, and would hate to lose that aspect of my life. Also, speaking is a large part of my job. I was wondering how, as a performer and a podcaster, you found your voice and what you did to reach a point that you were happy with your voice. Thank you for your time, Calvin. So I'm going to go ahead and answer this, and I'll definitely get you all in on the conversation as well, because I realize this might be a little trans-exclusive, but you also have opinions as well. So I have to say, the part where you said you're not an attractive person, that kind of hurt to read. Like, I want to hug you now. I can't imagine what that's like, and I certainly can't imagine that to be true. I think we all have things about us that we don't like, but I do believe that we're all, you know, beautiful in our own way, as cliche as that might sound. I think the one thing that you really have going for you, Calvin, is you have something that you're really good at. You know, you say that you love performing and you love doing improv. And I have to quote RuPaul's Drag Race on this, so forgive me. There was a drag queen on season 4 named Dita Ritz. Chris, yep. Are you familiar?
Yep.
And so Dita was a queen that was really good at runway. Like, she had legs for days and she had this great model body, but she suffered in the challenges. And what RuPaul kept trying to tell her was that you can take that confidence that you have from this thing and apply it to every aspect of your life. And if you have that well that you can draw from, you can really use that to fuel you. And so not everybody has that, and you do, Calvin. And so I think if you take those things that you're really good at and say, you know what, I am great at improv, I am great at comedy, and apply that confidence to other areas of your life, it really can help you. I know that's certainly helped me. You know, when I have feelings like I don't present very well, or when I feel like I'm not my best, it's like, you know what, I'm a damn good podcaster, and I am damn good at my job, and that sort of helps me fake it when I can't make it. And that's just the best advice I have, is to find that one thing that you're good at and let that fuel you. It also sounds like you have a pretty decent support system around you. Like, it sounds like you might have your improv crew or your comedy crew, and definitely lean on them too. It's very tempting to feel like you can't go to people or like you're dealing with this by yourself, but you know, you'd be surprised how many times the people around you are more than happy to shoulder that burden with you. And maybe burden's the wrong word, but you know, just really opening up to people, you know, and sharing those insecurities and having them, you know, help you through that, I think is a really good thing. And you know, when you say that your voice is different, I think that's a good thing. Look what it did for Bea Arthur. I mean, look what it did for Lauren Bacall, you know, being able to, you know, rebel against those standards of what you're supposed to sound like. You know, plenty of women have deeper voices.
I have a deep voice. I don't care.
Thank you. And there's nothing wrong with that. And being able to take that and make it yours, I think is also, you know, a valuable skill to have. And I definitely think you're on your way, and I think that you have the tools to really overcome this. What about you guys? You know, do you guys have things that you were ever insecure about, and if so, how did you get over them?
Public speaking is probably one of the ones that I still sort of struggle with, but I'm trying to get better about it. Being in funeral service, a lot of what you're doing is talking. You're talking to a family, you're leading them through their funeral arrangements, you're picking someone up like at their house, having to explain all the details to them, and then you're making announcements at the funeral and doing all these other things, and a lot of it is you giving direction and people following your lead. I have made mistakes there. One time I went up to give my announcement at the end of the funeral and I forgot what I was supposed to say. And I was like, oh shit. And I'm very much a person that I wear it on my face. And I could see the director in the back being like, don't wear it on your face. Don't wear it on your face. I'm like, I can't help but wear it on my face. Jesus Christ. So then this other director stepped in and he's like, hey, and then kind of gave the little spiel. They're like, oh, okay. And I felt really, you know, bad about it. And then when we got to the cemetery, I just froze and I forgot what I was going to say again. And I apologized to the deceased daughter. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'm like, you know, I haven't directed a lot of funerals yet. And I'm still getting the hang of this. And she's like, you know what? You were fine. She's like, everything was great. If my dad was here, he'd be like, life's too short. Shit happens. Like, who cares? And I was like, that's so nice of you to say. And they sent me a nice thank you card later and everything. So even though maybe I wasn't the best at it, people appreciated that I tried, you know, I was sincere. And sometimes, you know, something may seem, you know, scary or hard to do, and you just kind of gotta practice. You gotta kind of just go with it. I mean, even doing this podcast is still somewhat public speaking for me. People are gonna hear my voice on Friday that I don't even know. And, you know, sometimes I get approached in public. They're like, are you Chris? I'm like, oh, God, yes. Because I'm, you know, just put on the spot. But I think you can overcome those things and, you know, become more confident in what you're doing. It may take time, but you have to go at your own pace. At the end of the day, this is to help you, and it's not to help, you know, others. It's to get better at something that is difficult for you to do. And however long it takes you to get there, I think that, you know, it's important that you do it at a pace that you're comfortable with and that you're making the improvements that you want to make for you.
You brought up a really important point, Chris, you know, in terms of Calvin, you know, and especially, you know, as trans people, we tend to want to be what we think other people want us to be. You know, we have the standard of femininity or the standard of masculinity, and a lot of times we feel like we're not living up to it. And that's probably something that, you know, some cisgender folk can relate to too, but it's really about defining yourself and be like, you know, like, you know, like you said, you know, my voice may not sound like this person's, or it may not sound like a conventional woman's, but it's mine, and that doesn't make it any less mm-hmm. female. And being able to make those changes for yourself and setting your own standards of being like, I'm happy with my voice. I'm happy with the way I look. I'm not doing this for anybody else. I'm doing this so that I can be happy with myself. And that's important to distinguish.
Mm-hmm. I had the same thing as Chris. Like, public speaking for me used to be very difficult. And then when I became an L2 and I had my first PPTQ, it was like the night before, and I was like, oh my God, I have to do announcements for people? And for me, when I public speak, I don't forget what I'm going to say, but my voice shakes like I'm about to burst into tears, even though I'm not, but my voice will go, and it just kind of like shakes up and down and wavers all over the place. So for the first few, I thought it was really apparent, and then I was talking to Brooke afterwards, and I was like, did it sound like I was gonna cry? And he was like, no, I didn't even notice. And I was like, oh. And so after that, I would practice my head announcements like the night beforehand and actually run through them out loud. And then I figured out that if I was going to be giving an announcement with a microphone, if I held the microphone a certain distance from my mouth, you couldn't hear the wavering at all. And so I kind of just found a way to get around it. And then another thing that I have had issues with is my resting bitch face. I've had
me too.
I've had, I think, two judge reviews where they were like, "You need to not look so negative when you're judging," and I was just like, "Really? I'm always really happy when I'm judging. Like, I'm not a monster." But I always get like when I, you know, first talk to people and then we become friends or whatever, they're like, "I thought you hated me at the beginning because you don't smile." And I was like, "I know. It's my bad. I try, but it feels unnatural." Mm-hmm. And so when vet school started, you know, there's only 11 of us in my class. And the first day I met everyone, I was like, "All right, guys, I have resting bitch face big time. And if I stare at you like I want to kill you, I probably don't want to kill you. Just go with it. And you'll find out that I'm really a nice person most of the time." it's just my face. I can't unface. Since then, it's just been a not really an issue. Actually, one of the girls is just like, "I love Katie's face because she always looks like she's gonna kill something." But and it's also a point of like a joke, because when I get intoxicated, then I smile just all the time, and I do it so much that the next day my face is sore because I just don't naturally smile that much.
You don't use those muscles.
No, I don't. Yeah. Like, I probably will never have smile lines because I'm not intoxicated very often. But so they're always like, "We want drunk Katie." So to get over that insecurity, I just told everybody straight up. I was like, I'm sorry, my face just always looks negative, but I'm really not that negative. So if you guys can just deal with that, that'd be great. And since then, we haven't had any issues. And then I don't have to feel insecure anymore because I know that they all know what's going on with my face. I have no idea if that's helpful or not, but it was kind of a big deal to me. So, no.
Katie, the
yeah,
face
I don't think it is. I mean, you're just being like, "Hey, this is me." And like, telling everyone what you're about, and I think that that's cool. I ain't got no problem with that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny when you said that your face aches the next day, because it reminded me of that line that Frankenfurter says in Rocky Horror Picture Show, where he's like, "Even smiling makes my face ache."
I'm just imagining Katie in like her late 60s, and people are like, you know, "God, Katie, you look so great. You don't look your age. What's your secret?" "I never smile.
Never smile. Terrible thing."
Right, and they're gonna be like, "Huh, that's huh."
Yeah. So when I judge, I do try and make it a point where, I mean, I don't announce it in my like head judge comments. I'm not like, "Hey everyone, resting bitch face over here. Don't mind me." But I do try and, like, throughout the day, I'll just be like, "Oh, I should smile while I'm watching this match," so they don't think I'm, like, judging them or something.
Oh, you know what you could do? Remember how Hallie said she had the alarm to remind her to eat during events? You have the alarm to remind you to smile. So you'll be, like, table judging, and you'll hear, like, beep, 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 beep. And people are like, "What is that sound?" And Katie's like, "Smile. Oh, that's my smile alarm."
It's like every 10 seconds. But then one time I was trying to do that, and Brooke came up to me and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "You look kind of crazy. Like, you have this big ass smile on your face." And I was like, "I'm trying really hard." So,
oh man,
I don't know. I feel like if people see that you're putting an effort in whatever you're not confident in, and you're trying to improve, you know, if it's something that's improvable, like Chris with public speaking. You know, there's some things we can never change. And I feel like for me, being upfront about those things helps me. It might not help in this case, but, you know, having a good support system, like Erin said, I think is a really big deal. And I think the more you just grow to accept it, the better it'll come across to everybody else, too.
I think you bring up a really good point with owning it and just being like, you know what, this is my voice. Like, this is what I've been given. You know, I think it's admirable to want to be better and like always want to improve yourself. But eventually you get to a point where you're like, you know, this is what I look like. This is how I sound. And nothing I do really changes that. And so you can work with what you have, or you can try to, you know, maybe be something you're not, or and I think that comes across. And there's something very attractive about people that just sort of own who they are. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
How about you, Hallie?
For me, I guess my struggle with public speaking, which I also have, I guess, is very is limited to when I'm in front of cameras. I have a lot of experience with, you know, talking. I did college radio for 4 years. I did a lot of poetry readings when I was in college because I was a creative writing major. And I don't know, I seem to take really well to podcasting and sort of like being behind a microphone, but not really in front of a camera. I know when I went to GP Las Vegas, Stibbs came up to me on Thursday and was like, "Hey, we were supposed to be doing video with Kenji, but he decided to do coverage with Channel Fireball at the last minute. Would you mind if we have a camera person follow you around and watch your matches?" And I was just like, "Sure, that would be awesome." And then as soon as I walked away, I was just like, "Oh God, what did I sign up for?" So there was a camera guy. So his name is Richard Castle. He's done the Behind the Deck series for Gathering Magic. Great guy. Was great to work with. And I don't know. I was just so terrified when he was just like following me and like watching me play. I made mistakes that I wouldn't normally make. And I was just really flustered when he would try to talk to me about my deck and everything. I felt like I was either really, like I said, kind of frazzled, or I was trying so hard to be professional that I almost sounded kind of maudlin, like kind of like wooden. And I don't know, it was just like, it was an odd experience for me. And I was thinking to myself, like, okay, I really need to get better at this because I'm going to be in front of a camera eventually. Like, if I want to keep getting better at Magic, I'm going to have to play on camera feature matches. I'm probably going to get interviews. Like, I need to get better at this. So I started streaming. It took a little while to get everything figured out. And I streamed a couple of times. And I'm still really not good at being in front of a camera. And it's been really hard for me to get back in front of the camera again. Just because it's something that just terrifies me. But I know I have to sort of like force myself to do it or else I'm never going to get over it. So I guess that's like a work in progress right now. And it's funny because I don't know exactly what it is that bothers me about it. Like, maybe it's because I also have resting bitch face. I don't know. I always like, I have strangers come up to me at bus stops and stuff and say like, "Why don't you smile more?" And I'm just like, I can't stand those people. But I don't know what it is that terrifies me, but I mean, I am trying to get out of my comfort zone more and more and do more things that terrify me or do more things that I didn't think I was good at. I know I definitely grew up with parents who were of the mindset that like, you have this gift when you're born, and this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And, you know, if you're naturally good at something, then that's the thing that you do. So, like, my dad was good at math, and so he's an accountant. And so my parents were like, "Oh, you're good at writing. You should be a writer, and, you know, that's what you should do with your life." And, you know, it is something that I enjoy doing with my life, but, I mean, there are other things that I could potentially be good at if I had just taken the time to nurture those gifts instead of expecting them to come naturally. So I've been trying things like, you know, I'm taking computer programming classes and I've been really enjoying those. I'm going rock climbing now and I'm terrified of heights and I'm still afraid of heights and I'm still doing it anyway and I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I mean, I was really bad at Magic for the first like 6 months to a year that I was playing, but I just kind of kept stubbornly trying, and, you know, I've grown to realize that being stubborn isn't such a bad thing. I think sometimes we need to be more stubborn and just sort of, like, pursue things even if we think we're going to fail at them.
Mm-hmm. That's really well put.
Never know until you try.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, anything else you want to get off our chest before we wrap up the show?
I'm doing something fun.
What are you doing?
I'm going to my first ever concert.
But you've never ever been?
No. I mean, I was in, like, band in high school. I've been to my own, you know, shitty concerts. Huh. But, yes, I'm going to my first ever concert. It's Death Cab for Cutie on Wednesday, which is why we're recording on a Monday. And I really shouldn't go because I'm driving 3 hours there and driving 3 hours back, and I have another test on Friday, but it's going to be worth it. It's going to be awesome. I am so excited.
No, I think you should drive the 3 hours because you've been studying like a mad woman and you deserve a night to have a good time that doesn't involve studying or finals or giving cows halter tops or whatever it is that you do.
That's basically what halter we do every tops. Day. Yeah, so I'm really excited to do that.
Yeah, I have something I'm doing tomorrow also. Robert and I are taking Kirby to Bark at the Park at the Mariners game.
Bark at the Park, what is that?
It's a special event where they let you bring your dog to a baseball game.
Okay.
Yeah. So they let you purchase a ticket for your dog. I'm not sure what kind of accommodations they're going to have for the dogs, but your dog gets to hang out at the stadium and watch the baseball game with you. They're going to give all the dogs Mariners bandanas to wear, which is awesome. Anyone who follows me and Katie on Twitter will know that dogs with bandanas are adorable.
They're the best kind of dogs.
Yeah, and the dogs will get to run the bases after the game.
Oh, that'll be so cool. Can you film it? Can you put like a little vine?
A little Kirby cam? Yeah, I'll try.
Kirby cam, that is too cute.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to us on the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. If I ever get over my fear of cameras and decide to stream again, I will let you know, and you can watch me at twitch.tv/HalCanSan. You could send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com, and you can read my writing here on Gathering Magic.
You really do have to stream again because there was so much hype for you to even start the stream, and I feel like you left people hanging.
I know. I will... I mean, for me, a big part of it is that I really need a solid schedule beforehand. Like, I was talking to one of my friends who does a lot of streaming and has done moderating for a lot of streamers, and I said, okay, if I want to make my stream better, like, what can I do about it? And he was like, having a consistent schedule is the best way to get your stream on the map. And I was just like, well, I'm taking this computer science class that's on Mondays and Wednesdays for like 4 weeks. And then when that's done, I'm taking this other computer science class that's on Tuesdays and Thursdays for like 4 weeks. And having consistency when your schedule is thrown around that much is really difficult. So that's part of it. The stage fright is part of it. I am going to settle on a schedule as soon as I possibly can, and I will then make an announcement on Twitter about when I'm going to be streaming again.
Cool.
So I'm Katie. You can follow me on Twitter at meanmugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can get me an email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. Yo to Chris. And my Tumblr is also to Chris. And my Snapchat is CrypticCommand with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Asterisk. That is OriginalOesterus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at @thegfbracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday at gatheringmagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care. Bye.